21 of us from the Valley, Haynes and Clequan were called to Vietnam. And out of the 21 guys that went over, every one of us came back home, which can't be said anywhere else in the United States.
A local native veteran, Jimbo Stevens, says a few words for Veterans Day. The Lady Glacier Bears are back from regionals and excited for next season. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Katie Hicks.
Could a volcano erupting in the Aleutian Islands put money in people's pockets in Bellingham, Washington, more than 2,000 miles away? A scientist in Canada says yes. Confused? Former Alaska reporter John Ryan clears things up from KUOW in Seattle.
The Kasatochi volcano sits on a tiny island in the Bering Sea. It's part of Alaska, but it's closer to Russia than to Anchorage. When the volcano erupted in 2008, it smothered the island in a deep layer of rock and ash. Kasatochi was virtually sterilized. But a storm was forming over the island as the volcano erupted. It scattered volcanic ash to the southeast, over hundreds of miles of the North Pacific, where it had a different effect.
When the ash fell into the ocean, it released iron into the surface waters.
Roberta Hom is an oceanographer at the University of Victoria. She says the ash didn't sterilize the ocean, it fertilized it.
In this area of the ocean, the phytoplankton, these are the microscopic plants that live in the ocean, they have plenty of what they need to grow, but they don't have enough iron. So when the iron was added from this ash, suddenly they had everything they needed, and they were able to grow quickly and reproduce.
Satellite images showed the tiny plants at the base of the ocean food chain went gangbusters. The plankton more than doubled their growth over an area of ocean bigger than Alaska. It was the biggest bloom of plankton ever seen in that part of the Pacific. Hom's study of the volcano-fueled plankton explosion was just published in September of this year. That was during another population explosion.
Wow! Whoa! Oh.
That's the sound of happy fishermen off Lummi Island near Bellingham this summer. They're watching hundreds of Fraser River sockeye salmon emerge from the sea as they pull in their reef nets. This year's run of sockeye on Canada's Fraser River dwarfed scientists' expectations. Nearly 35 million came back from the ocean to the Fraser or got intercepted by fishing boats along the way. That's more than any year since 1913. It's also a huge turnaround from last year's disastrously small returns. This year, millions of Fraser sockeye swam through Washington state waters before turning north toward Vancouver and their spawning grounds upstream. It's Canada's biggest salmon fishery and a major one for nine Washington tribes and non-tribal fishers in northern Puget Sound.
Then all of a sudden we get this huge salmon run, which is really an enormous event.
Tim Parsons thinks the Fraser fishing fleet has the volcano to thank for its good fortune this year. He's a retired oceanography professor at the University of British Columbia. When Kasatochi erupted, this year's sockeye would have been about 2 years old. They'd be swimming around the Gulf of Alaska when suddenly there's a lot more food on their table.
Salmon don't eat phytoplankton directly, but the food chain set off by that ash and the phytoplankton growing was enough to cause a considerable increase in growth and survival of the Fraser River salmon.
Parsons says this year's sockeye would have been at just the right age to benefit from a sudden spurt in their food supply. Biologist Ray Hilborn at the University of Washington is skeptical. He says it's unlikely that the volcano could benefit just one of the many salmon stocks that swim in the Gulf of Alaska. Tim Parsons says salmon migrate to discrete areas in the Gulf, so it's possible that one run might benefit while others don't. Theories abound on why the Fraser sockeye failed to show up last year and why they showed up in extraordinary numbers this year. Bill Crawford is a research scientist with Fisheries and Oceans Canada. He says Parsons' volcano hypothesis is plausible, but proving it or disproving it will be tricky.
Basically, we don't know where any one individual stock of salmon goes in the deep sea waters for its last 2 years of life. They're pretty well out of sight, you know, beyond our radar, so to say.
Tim Parsons says he's gotten a lot of skeptical reactions to his idea that a volcano could essentially produce salmon.
Oh, yes. That's what science is all about. There are a couple of scientists who are very enthusiastic and supportive, and there are probably at least a couple of dozen scientists who say, no, that couldn't be.
Parsons isn't just some retired guy with a crazy theory. Last week in Portland, a conference of oceanographers held a symposium celebrating Parsons' 50 years of research. The Canadian government even awards a Timothy Parsons Award for oceanography each year. I'm John Ryan reporting.
November 11th is Veterans Day. Across the United States, the holiday honors veterans who have served our country as members of the armed forces. Jimbo Stevens from Clequan is one of them.
Good afternoon. This is Jimbo Stevens. I know you might recognize me from Country Show on Fridays, but I was asked to say a few words concerning veterans. It's our day today. And just a little history background, if you will. During between 1964 and 1975, 21 of us from the Valley, Haines, and Clequan were called to Vietnam. And out of the 21 guys that went over, every one of us came back home, which can't be said anywhere else in the United States, for that matter. We were very lucky, fortunate, and out of the 21 guys, if you will, a lot of us, a majority of us, were natives from Clequan. Out of the 21 guys, three of these guys were wounded in action, meaning they received Purple Hearts. And I put down some words in the mid-80s and tried to capture some of the things that went on both over there in a strange country and with our families back at home. So allow me to read to you a poem I wrote back in the 80s. And some of you have heard it, but those of you who haven't, it's called Welcome Home. I thought someday we'd understand, back to the world to no marching band, how our blood-stained Vietnam protests tell us to scram. Send by the leaders of this land to a tour of duty in the now. Sons and daughters of the 60s took their stand, a general rush, hard to stay calm. Praying to the Almighty with all our might, gotta make it through the night. The wall to share our sorrow, dear God, just to see tomorrow. Now we stand tall to see our 40th fall. Gotta be booking, can't wait to taste home cooking. Come on, brother, it'll be okay. 366, what a day. Now we honor the 58,000 plus who love breathing just like us. Thank you. Mushish, just some words that I thought I'd write and put down. But if you see a vet today, give him a hug or say hi, because it's a day that most of us that we're in the service deserve, and thank you very much.
The Haines Glacier Bear women's volleyball team played their last game against the Craig Panthers in Ketchikan last Monday, November 1st, and Tuesday, November 2nd. Just getting to the regional seemed to be an adventure of its own. There were several delays getting to Ketchikan due to high winds, but they finally made it after several attempts. Then after a three-hour, very rough ferry ride, the motion-sickened girls hopped onto a bus and proceeded to drive 45 minutes to Craig. They had 20 minutes to warm up before the game. The first game at the regionals was on Thursday morning against Petersburg. The Lady Glacier Bears were off to a good start, but had a disappointing finish. They lost to number 3-ranked Sitka, which happened in 2009 as well.
Liana Scholl helps coach the team.
And then, so the second night we played Sitka, who, you know, there's a little history there. They put us out of the tournament last year as well, and we took them to 5 games the year before, and so we were very hungry to beat them, knowing that they beat us out last year and that we have the potential to beat them, but we were going to have to play probably our best game ever to do that. So we went into the game motivated and confident and very hungry and started out again really strong and awesome, but just weren't able to maintain that through the match.
The girls were slow to warm up after losing the first 2 games, 9-25, and then 23-25.
but rallied back to win the next two games, 25-22 and 25-21, before losing the tiebreaker, 4-15, ending the 2010 season ranked number 4 overall.
I mean, I think the season was a success in that the girls reached a new level of play, both individually and as a team. I saw everybody get better. We only lost one girl, and so we have next year we'll have a lot of girls returning, and those girls are very motivated to work on their volleyball game between now and next season. And they are also realizing that they can compete with the best, and so they're getting more confidence in just how they see themselves, you know, like, hey, we're a strong team, and we can have a winning season, and we can even beat teams at regionals and go to state. So I think that's kind of where we left it off.
This is Katie Hicks reporting for KHNS. You can listen to KHNS News anytime, online at khns.org. Just click on the Listen tab for stories from the last week, or go to Archives for earlier stories.